These are the Target Files. Journey back with us between the 1970s and 1990s on a TARDIS nostalgia trip as we look back at the novelizations and audiobook releases of classic Doctor Who stories. Accessing Gallifreyan Archive. Subject matter: Time Lord known as the Doctor. Target file: The Tomb of the Cybermen. Author: Jerry Davis. The Cybermen. Silver. Indestructible monsters whose only goal is power, seem to have disappeared from their planet, Telos, when a party of archaeologists, joined by the Doctor, Jamie, and Victoria, land on a Cyberman's barren, deserted planet. They uncover what appears to be their tomb.
Hello there, welcome to Doctor Who Target Files. This time we are discussing the second Doctor story, The Tomb of the Cybermen, novelised by its TV writer Jerry Davis, and we are also discussing the audiobook read by Michael Kilgariff with the Cybermen voices performed by Nicholas Briggs. Hello Alex, your thoughts on this second Doctor adventure in the Target novel and audiobook form?
Well, I thought it was very good. It had a good pace, lots of stuff going on, sort of good characterization between the Doctor and Jamie and Victoria, as it's being Victoria's sort of first story. And I thought it was very good. I did have slight niggles that the chapters were very, very big and long in some parts. But I think it flowed quite well. What did you think about it?
Yes, Al, I'd agree with a lot of what you said. The chapters were quite long. I had a look at the stats, 141 pages as a Target novel, which is sort of towards the higher edge of the range. I think you looked at some Terence Dix books that were around about 120 on average. You know, stretched out a bit in the audiobook, which we'll come to later. But yes, I've always loved the TV story, one that was missing for two decades, of course, until it turned up in Hong Kong in the early 90s. We're very thankful this one came back because it is a really superb TV story. And I think Jerry Davis makes a very good effort at transferring it across to the Target page. Yeah, sort of did enjoy it in general, Al. That's my initial thoughts. And shall we also introduce ourselves? Sorry, Mike. Hello, this is Mike from Swansea.
And hello, this is Alex from Exeter.
The main things that stuck out for you, the themes. I mean, for me, the biggest theme is sort of archaeological, isn't it? Because Jerry Davis and Kit Pedler, even though we look at their writing as scientists, apparently Kit Pedler brought in the scientific element and Jerry Davis added the dramatic elements to it. And they found common ground, apparently, with archaeology. And a big theme of this is sort of the regenesis of Tutankhamun, isn't it? And how the Cybermen are getting reactivated.
Oh, well, most definitely. It's whole archaeological thing of dealing with the tomb and it being sort of grave robbing and sort of, you know, but having the thing of regeneration with the Cybermen, thinking that they can come back and be the major race. And I think there's some great bits, you know, like, you know, blowing up old archaeological digs to get the finds out, which is like the worst thing you can do. And I really like it. I think great archaeological theme, and there's also this whole genetic theme going throughout because of the Cybermen. They want to recreate and they don't care how they go about doing it. I thought it was really well written, this book.
Yes, even though it's set on, I think it's Telos, isn't it? Explained as
yes.
This book. There's a mixture of the old, the earth-based, like the archaeological stuff, and we can recognise it as a desert. and the sort of the new with the cybernetics, isn't there, Al?
Yeah, most definitely. It has that sort of old world, the whole planet is dusty and dirty, so it feels like an archaeological dig. And then you've got these bits of technology once they get inside the tomb, which are, you know, science-y and sort of the way the Cybermen remake themselves better with giant technology, and the ray gun bits with, you know, the target practice room with Jamie and that end up. And it's got elements of both, really.
Do you find these earlier Cybermen stories in the classic series a little bit more intriguing than the later ones? I think perhaps the Cybermen have been slightly overused. The new sort of series version, which I'm not a huge fan of, within the 21st century Who, Al, what do you think of that?
I personally think that, yeah, since come back, they have been overused. They're sort of used as, you know, people, everybody knows, so it's a good sort of, you know, co-sign to get people watching Doctor Who, really. But the original ones, sort of the first couple of episodes, like 10th Planet, Moonbase and this, they really had sort of presence and menace, and they had that sort of feel, what this is what the human race might end up as. Where I think, personally, only one what's come close to that in New Who is the first one when they brought them back with David Tennant, Age of Steel. That actually had some sort of menace to it, but otherwise they're just there as, this is a regular monster we all recognise these days, unfortunately.
I'm trying to remember, Al, have we actually seen the original series Cybermen in the new series, or have they all been the alternate versions that came from Pete's World, Rose's father?
I think there was a couple of the old ones in the first episode of Age of Steel, when before we got into the parallel world, really. I think in that first episode when they were taking over London, when they do that sort of march bit where they go through the glass, I think there was a couple of the old ones.
Yes, and we had the head turn up, of course, in Van Staten's museum in the Dalek, episode in the Eccleston series, didn't we?
Yeah, and I just don't think the new ones, I think, just look a bit too cybernetic. So this, you know, where the old ones, you could sort of see the human parts done. I know Annika always says about the 10th Planet how with the gloves, having gloves sort of painted, looked much more scary.
Yes, and there's that fabulous shot in the Mark Gatiss drama Adventure in Space and Time of one of them smoking in the set.
Oh, definitely, this is great. But I just think, like you, I think they've lost their sort of scariness. And I think, where would you set up to? Because I think it started happening in Classic Who as well. I think when you got to stuff like Silver Nemesis and that, I just don't think they were that scary.
Yes, the 25th anniversary story, sometimes referred to as Silly Nemesis now.
Well,
for various reasons. I do like going back and watching Silver Nemesis. It's not one of the greatest stories, but it's enjoyable enough. But like you said, Al, I think they had lost a lot of their menace by then. Perhaps they peaked around about Earthshock within the 80s era, which was quite early on. I do enjoy Attack of the Cybermen later on as a Colin Baker story.
Oh, that is good. Yeah, I think that is the last good one, Colin Baker. I like, what's the one where Tegan leaves with the other Peter Davison Cyberman? What's that one called? Is it Regeneration of the Cybermen? What's that one?
That's a Dalek story, Al, isn't it? That's
Resurrection of the Daleks.
Yeah, just Earthshock in the Davison era.
Which is a brilliant story because of the great cliffhanger. There's no easy way to say what.
Anyway, digressing a bit from the Tomb of the Cybermen we're reviewing this time. Any characters that stood out for you, Al? I mean, for me, Toberman's a pretty central character throughout.
Oh, most definitely Toberman, sort of. I think he's quite cleverly written, Toberman, because he's seen as the strong man and sort of person who's a bit unintelligent at the beginning, and then slowly you get drip-fed his importance, really, and by the end, he sort of saves the whole area in the tomb. If it wasn't for him, you know, the Cybermen would have escaped.
Yes, not sure the reasoning, but written in the book, adapted by Jerry Davis, as more of a sort of Middle Eastern character, but I think he's played by an African-American or Afro-Caribbean actor in the TV show. It does work either way, doesn't it? It gives us the image of great strength. He's almost like a... he's almost half Cyberman before he starts to become a Cyberman himself, isn't he? Ooh, spoilers. He's got that element to him.
Almost definitely. I think he's there, you know, he sort of is half not really human at the beginning, but, you know, the more you get into the book, he sort of turns slowly into what Cybermen think humans should be, really.
Yes, and there's a great ending for him as well. We won't give it away.
No, it's a fantastic ending. We won't say what that is. I don't think other characters stood out. Well, we had Americans and people who wanted to make money. I'm just trying to get their names. And there's some really good female characters in this book.
Yeah, Kaftan's a pretty standout one, isn't she? Played a lovely actress called Shirley Cooklin on television.
Saying I watched the cover episode off the DVD this morning to entertain, and she stands out really well.
Yeah, it's very charismatic and convincing character, isn't she?
Yeah, and through the whole book, you know, as well as in the TV episode, she is the woman who's obviously, you know, paying for the dig and she wants control. And then, you know, by the end, she's still in control of the spoilers, what we won't say. But there's some great scenes between her and Victoria throughout the book, I think.
There's some great scenes between Victoria and the Doctor as well. The one standout one, a lot of people quote a key moment of Patrick Troughton's time as the Doctor. Perhaps, well, for one reason, because it's so well written and performed, and for one reason that we don't have a lot of Patrick Troughton to compare it against, is the conversation he has with Victoria about recently losing her family towards the end. It's very poignantly written, Al, isn't it?
Oh, that's just great. That bit, that little scene is great. Well, there's some sort of little bits all the way through this episode with her and Patrick. Like, at the beginning where she's afraid and he sort of makes, you know, a joke about her clothes and what Jamie's wearing as well. That's a skirt as well. And it's sort of really nice, sort of poignant note.
Sorry, they are a brilliant team, aren't they? We've been lucky enough to meet Fraser and Wendy at several events, Al, and they just, they still have all that chemistry, don't they? After all these many years.
They love each other still this day, and they're just great friends, I think. I think there hasn't been a, I think a better companion team since this lot, though I do think that, in the Matt Smith period, that they got it nearly there, I think.
Yes, Karen and Arthur, sort of a similar chemistry. I mean, could you have seen Jamie and Victoria ending up romantically? I know their fate is that their memories apparently wiped, aren't they, of their time with the Doctor when he's forced to regenerate into John Pertwee?
Yeah, I think there could have been something there, because it's so sort of loving between the two of them in a sort of friendly way, you know, because you didn't have the sort of extra bits like we have now. Like, you know, the Doctor always has to have some relationship between the companions. Well, I reckon it would have worked.
On the audiobook release itself, there's some notes within the cover by David J. Howe, who wrote the very famous Target book, which is thoroughly recommended, folks. I'm not sure if it's available at the moment. It's a guide to the Target books. It was re-released earlier this year. You may be able to find it online, hopefully for a decent price, because the earlier editions can go for a hell of a lot, I know, at the moment.
Yeah, it was quite pricey when it came out, wasn't it? I mean, that's why I don't think I got it.
Yes, and David writes the sleeve notes for these audiobook releases. He actually mentions that because this story was missing between the late 60s and 1992, the novelisation benefits from a more evocative version of the story written by Jerry Davis. I think he's made a big improvement here, Jerry Davis. We reviewed The Tenth Planet elsewhere a few years ago, Al. We weren't overly keen on it, but he really captures the spirit of the story much better in this Tomb of the Cybermen.
I would agree. You know, it's much more evocative, and there's some great scenes that you watch in the TV episode, and they just sort of go past in a couple of seconds, where in the book, nicely spread out, and you feel for people, like that scene at the beginning where the guy gets electrocuted by the tomb, and it sort of goes by in a couple of seconds in the TV program, where in the book it's sort of nicely spread out, and you feel quite sorry for him.
He does give a decent background to everybody, or everybody seems comfortable in their character by the time we arrive at this point where we meet them in the story.
Oh yeah, most definitely. They all seem to have a good backstory, but that might be why the book is a little bit longer than normal, because it does have a lot of depth to it.
Yes, another change from the book is the introduction of the Cybermats. They're actually more scorpion-like creatures with a bite in this book, whereas in the TV version they have teeth to attack people with. What did you make of that change, Al? I think it adds a bit more viscerality to them.
Oh, most definitely. I think they're better in the book than they are in the TV program. They just look a bit weird in the TV program, where here they look like insects that would bite you and land on you. I think they're a bit more horrific in the book, and I think I like them a bit more in the book, to be honest.
Yes, in the Matt Smith story, Closing Time, they returned with those teeth, and I thought they looked a little bit silly, to be honest, then.
Oh, yeah, definitely that one where a lot of the characters get bitten by it, and I thought it was quite silly in that. They look better as insects. And I think the idea of having them as scorpions goes back to the Egyptology, sort of Sphinx characters or myth there.
What I may do, actually, folks, is I ended up helping to crowdfund a documentary about Doctor Who fans a few years ago. One of the perks of crowdfunding the film called Who's Changing? An Adventure in Time with Fans, which you can find online and still available on DVD, was that I got sent by the director a knitted version of a cyber mat.
Oh, really?
Yes, it still adorns my bedroom. I may be willing to give it away, though, Al. If we can think up a quick question for this podcast, maybe. I was thinking something along the lines of, if you'd like to win a knitted cyber mat, could you tell me, it's been mentioned already in this podcast, which country the missing episodes of The Tomb of the Cybermen was found in? Let us know, folks, at DW Target Files, or check Facebook for Doctor Who Target Files. So that's the question, folks. Which country was The Tomb of the Cybermen reels returned from in 1992, I believe? Do you think you know the answer to that, Al? We mentioned it earlier on.
Oh, I think so. I won't enter, but I think I know the answer.
It wasn't Wales, folks. I know they make Doctor Who year, but it wasn't actually Wales. So that's a clue for you. You got another 180-odd countries of the world to look at. So.
Yes.
Or was it a country? Or was it... No, sorry. My mistake. It's a city, isn't it? It's not a country.
It's a city.
City that used to belong to a certain country we may be sitting in at the moment, and it may have gone somewhere else, gone into ownership of another country around about 1997. How many more clues do you want? You know, it's him. We used to see Sylvester McCoy when he was recording The Hobbit, folks, and he couldn't mention anything, and he'd say the letter H and put his hand over his mouth and say, "I can't talk about the hump," because of Peter Jackson's secrecy. But I can also say that the answer may be hump. Oh,
yes.
But let us know, folks, at DW Target Files, or search Facebook for Doctor Who Target Files. And that may be winging its way, hopefully without a sting or teeth, to you in the post.
Definitely. Do you want a closing date for that?
It's whenever. Whoever gives us the answer, Al, we'll do a little random generator of names.
Definitely.
And then we'll find its way to you.
Lovely.
But if you live in overseas, it might take a bit longer with the postage and packing.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello, this is Who's News on the 18th of November. Right, first thing we need to mention is that two writers have been finally announced for season 10, and one is quite special. That is Rona Munro, who originally wrote Survivors for the last ever episode of the classic series with Sylvester McCoy. She's coming back to write episode 9 of season 10. The episode is called Eaters of the Light and looks quite special, as it will be her first Doctor Who since Survivors. Also announced is Jamie Matteson, who's coming back to do episode 5 of new season. His last three episodes he's done for various seasons have all been fantastic. A rumour that has appeared in the Mirror this week is that Chris Chibnall wants a brand new start when he starts writing and directing Doctor Who for season 11. The rumour veil that started is that Peter Capaldi and Pearl McAtee are not coming back. Both of them apparently on one-year contracts. Personally, I think Peter should, but we'd love to know your opinions here. Also, something quite sad that's happened in the last week is that BBC have announced that the Doctor Who Experience in Cardiff will be closing in July 2017. No exact reason given, but we all expect it's to do with costs and other sort of things like that internally at the BBC. One of the things from Big Finish that's out this week is Torchwood Outbreak, a new drama with three of the original characters. John Barrowman and Eve Miles are there back as their main characters. Another thing that has been announced this week from Big Finish is that Unit Box Set 4, no title yet, will have three of the old Unit characters coming back to play their roles. Joe Grant, Mike Yates, Sergeant Benton are all back to face new adventures with the new unit team led by the wonderful Kate Stewart.
Covers of this novelisation now. Initially released in 1978 with a cover by Jeff Cummins. At this time, Jeff wanted to include a picture of Patrick Troughton, but the target policy had started in this period of only allowing the current Doctor to have his face on the cover. So we ended up with a picture of a Cyberman in front of a wall. Doesn't sound very exciting with a blue background, but interestingly enough, he used Cyberman from The Invasion, a later story, as his reference. So we actually have the wrong type of Cyberman on this cover.
Oh no!
But to me it works, to an extent. I think, as you said, it can always do with a Doctor. It's not immediately evident to me that it's a tomb the Cyberman's head is in front of. You know, it's very well drawn, the Cyberman, in the background, but it just doesn't stand out to me as to what the book should be about. Then, in 1992, Virgin Books, who did the New Adventures, re-released this story.
Yeah.
Using a cover originally used for the VHS release, which did now feature Patrick Troughton, thankfully
enough.
Ah,
that's better.
Alistair Pearson did the rebranded cover.
That's why it's better.
An excellent looking one. I think it's very good in itself. I would probably prefer that to the original one. Although they went back to a version with slightly darkened blue of the original 1978 cover for the audiobook release, which has the Doctor Who sort of bluish logo, which is the Pertwee McGann stroke logo again. So I quite like that one too, but I think the one they used for the VHS is the one I'd would stand out for me, Al, given the fact Patrick's on there.
Yeah, I'd agree as well. It's a better one. It's, you know, Andrew Pearson as well, so I think it's better.
Strange, isn't it? How they don't always do justice to the better stories. I think, not giving away spoilers as to my score, this is one of the better stories in the target range. But that initial cover just doesn't do it justice.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. That original cover's terrible.
Yeah, there we go, folks. Controversial, terrible. Oh, everyone makes an effort, Al.
I much prefer the second one, the Virgin one, personally.
Now, Al, shall we move on to the audiobook released by the now-defunct Audio Go a good few years ago and read by the gentleman who played the cyber leader in this story, Michael Kilgariff, along with new series voice artist Nicholas Briggs doing the voice of the Cyberman. What did you make of Michael's performance?
I thought it wasn't bad. He got most voices okay. Pat Trout was okay, and Victoria wasn't bad. His Jamie voice was very good. I think sound-wise and effect-wise it was very good. Not a bad reading, to be honest.
Yes, I put down, Al, there was a mishmash of other performers for me. There were shades of Tom Baker at times.
I would agree with that, actually. Yeah, there were some times.
Occasionally he ramped up the tension in the more heading towards violent scenes, which put me in mind of Brian Blessed as he got a little bit shouty at periods.
Yeah, he did. I'll be honest. Yeah, I would agree with that. He did. They did sort of go up and down tempo.
A famous performer in the UK who performed up to 20 years ago, in the moments of calm, he really reminded me of an artist called Willie Rushton. Do you remember him, Al?
Oh, yeah, I know, he did a bit.
Yes, I did Google Willie Rushton. Apparently died December 1996, 20 years ago. So that's been a long time, but he had a very distinguished voice, didn't he? And Michael manages to capture that too. But I think he does generally well with the character voices. What did you make of Nick Briggs, Al?
Oh, Nick Briggs is good, but I don't know if he quite gets the sing-songiness of those Cybermen, because I had times where I couldn't really understand what they were saying.
Yes, the whole famous "You Will Be Like Us" line. And it doesn't seem too singy-songy, as you said, not too harmonised, not too up and down. It's very straight-laced, isn't it?
I did have problems understanding Cybermen sometimes.
Because another thing with the new series Cybermen, they are very monotone. I don't really like the whole delete idea and how they sound.
No, I'm not a big fan of the new ones. I think, as you said, I think the best Cyberman voice is Cyberman from Earthshock, I think. Do you think the women came okay over in this book? I think it was sort of half and half.
Yes, we have Victoria in grief, adjusting to life with a Doctor. This is her first trip, I think you mentioned, Al, didn't you?
Yeah.
Following her parents' death in Evil of the Daleks. So she's fairly meekly written, I suppose, you know, gaining a little bit of confidence as you go throughout the story. A little perturbed by the situation she's in, admittedly a very frightened situation. But then, of course, we have someone like Kaftan, who's a very strongly written female character.
Yeah, most definitely. I think it actually works out well, because I can sort of understand why Victoria is screaming quite a lot in this book. But she also is quite with it as well. So, you know, she does get the upper hand of Kaftan eventually. So I think it works well, to be honest, this time.
She shows her great intelligence there. And as we mentioned before, I want to mention that wonderful scene with Pat where she's talking about her grief and he mentions how we're unique human beings or a unique Time Lord. Nobody can have the experiences we're having. And that just comes across to everybody's life, really, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. Everybody has different experiences when it comes to grief and death. But I just think it's brilliant. Those one scene is absolutely brilliant. There's lots of little touches like this. It's a very well-written book, I think, personally.
So, Alex, shall we move towards our overall thoughts on this novelisation and the audiobook?
Very well written. It's got good chapter headings and it's got a nice sort of pace. You're sort of in the action of the tomb and what's going to happen quite a lot. So it does go along quite well. I would say it's a little bit long in some chapters. So, you know, when listening to the audiobook, some of the chapters turn into nearly 40 minutes, which can be a bit long. So the book's very good. The audiobook, I would agree, the reader wasn't bad. He did go a bit over top in some bits. Nick Briggs' Cybermen were okay, but there were some parts I couldn't actually understand what they were saying. So I think the book would get an 8.5, and I'd say about a 7 for the audiobook.
Do you know, I did like a lot of the audiobook. I said I found Michael Kilgareth to be a mishmash. Michael Kilgareth to be a mishmash of voices. Nick Briggs to not bring too much variation to the Cybermen's tone. For the book, very good narrative, very exciting in periods. Could easily get bogged down with being a story generally set underground for most of it. But it's so well directed, the TV version, it really takes you in with the intensity, the suspense. And I think he's transferred that really well over to the book. So I would probably give an 8.5 for the book. And I'm going to go a bit higher for the audiobook. I'm going to give that a 9. So yes, I did really enjoy this one. Al, a superb Patrick Troughton story. Thank goodness it was recovered. We need to find more of Pat, I think, don't we?
Oh, definitely. We need more. And we'll see, because you know, if sales go well, we'll have more animated things.
Yes, if you've heard our most recent mini-episode, myself and Alex, 2 weeks ago now, attended the Power of the Daleks first 3-episode screening at the BFI in London South Bank. It's been available to download for 2 weeks now, so let us know what you think, folks, at DW Target Files or search Facebook for Doctor Who Target Files podcast.
Yeah, I thought there was problems with the downloads out of interest.
Really?
Yeah, I believe it crashed in under a minute once it was launched.
Oh, okay. Oh, you meant the actual Power of the Daleks. I thought you meant us. Yeah. I thought you meant us then. I thought, well, what's happened?
No. Power of the Daleks, apparently it crashed under 2 minutes.
The thing is, folks, if we get good sales from the downloads and the DVDs, it'll encourage them to try out a few more. So we'd love to see more of those missing stories animated now. Or ideally, we would love for them to turn up.
They must be somewhere. We can always hope they're somewhere.
Well, it's fascinating, Al, isn't it? All these different places we had Tomb of the Cybermen turning up in. Oh, I can't say because it's a competition question. We had Dalek Master Plan a few episodes turning up in an old Mormon church in the basement.
They just turn up. I reckon they'll turn up somewhere because the amount of places around the world where we sent film to, because it being the BBC, so they must turn up at some point.
I can't wait to read the book, Phil Morris, when he completes his search. I can't wait to read the book. Perhaps there'll be a film, you know? It sounds so exciting in itself, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Next time, the Target Files will be discussing Death to the Daleks, written by Terence Dix, along with the BBC audiobook release, read by John Culshaw, Dalek Voices, performed by Nicholas Briggs. Doctor Who Target Files, Tomb of the Cybermen review, featured Alexander Gibbons and Michael Winks. Music from Tomb of the Cybermen, originally composed by Ron Grader and the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. Newsround opening and closing themes, originally composed by Ted Heath and his orchestra and John Baker. I Am the Doctor, originally composed by Murray Gold. Version for this podcast by YouTube user Ruling Terror 42. No copyright infringement intended on any of the music used in this podcast. Doctor Who Target Files Tomb of the Cybermen review was recorded in Swansea, South Wales and Exeter, Devon, England during November 2016.